Joey Harrington in studio with us, Mike Lynch and Suk today on Primetime, and Joey joins us every single Friday. And before we get to some of the NFL stuff that I have in my mind, I do want to ask about Justin Herbert. And the fans are complaining about the play calling. They're complaining about Mario Cristobal's idea of an offense. And they're saying that those two guys are shortchanging Justin Herbert. They're not letting him perform to his full ability due to the play calling and the play style. Do you agree with that, or is there a reason why you think Herbert's play kind of fell so quickly after the Stanford and Washington games?
I don't agree with it. I don't have a reason why his play fell. It goes back to, you know, what we were talking about last segment, you know, and just, you know, where do you start? But the fact that he did have such success against, I mean, the first half of the Stanford game,
it's about as good as you could play.
Oh my goodness. I mean, the guy was lights out. And last time I checked, that was still a Royal Colin plays and running Cristobal's offense, right? I mean, you can't have it both ways. The voices that are saying that Arroyo and Cristobal are holding Justin Herbert back are simply frustrated that Oregon is struggling offensively. And look, it's not one style. It's just a matter of executing what is called. And sometimes that falls on Justin, and sometimes it's the fault of other people. I mean, it's just that's the nature of football. I mean,
when things don't go the way people expect them to go, no one wants to hear that it's a litany of things, or no one wants to hear that it's the way football is. People want
an answer.
They want an answer, and they want someone to blame, and they're not going to blame Justin Herbert.
Nope.
The easiest person to blame is the guy calling the plays, and if it's not the guy calling the plays, it's the guy who's in charge of everything.
There you go.
It's just that's the.
That
is the nature of the beast at every single level of football.
So switching gears to the NFL, I think the Patrick Mahomes story is really fascinating this year with the Chiefs. And there's a lot of different prongs to this, but I want to start with the sitting for a year versus starting immediately quarterback question. I know you came in week one and in your rookie year and started immediately from that point, so you've got some experience with that.
Week three, I sat for two whole weeks.
So Patrick Mahomes sits for a whole year.
Yep.
Plays week 17 last week.
Yep.
This year, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Darnold starts right away. He looks amazing in week one. Everyone's like, give him the Hall of Fame jacket now. And now he's throwing four picks a game, and he got benched, or he's hurt for Josh McCown. Where do you sit on the whole benching a quarterback for a year that's a rookie or starting him right away?
What did Carson Palmer do?
Carson Palmer sat for an entire year.
Yeah. What did Phillip Rivers do?
Yeah, he sat behind Drew Brees, right?
What did Eli Manning do?
Who did Eli sit behind?
Kurt Warner.
Was it Kurt Warner?
For a whole year?
For 14 games.
Yeah. Okay.
I am very much a believer that, and frankly, this comes just because of personal experience, that there are very few guys out there that can, A, handle the pressures of an NFL season immediately, you know, their first year, or B, have the resiliency to ride the wave that is such a long NFL year. If you look at the guys who have had success playing as a rookie, Ben Roethlisberger threw the ball. I think he averaged 17 passes a game.
Run the ball and play defense.
Right?
And did he come in week four of his first year? Or something like that.
Tommy Maddox, I think, got hurt for the year. Roethlisberger came in, and they had the training wheels on him all year long.
Absolutely. Matt Ryan had Michael Turner run for about 1,800 yards that season. There is example after example.
Yeah, Russell Wilson comes to mind as another guy. Defense, run the ball, training wheels.
Absolutely. There are very few guys, and granted, there have been guys to come in and play right away and have success. I am a believer that what did Aaron Rodgers do? Aaron Rodgers sat for three years.
Yep.
And what did Tom Brady do? I mean, you go through example after example, and there's such a rut because you're paying these guys so much money. that there is this rush, this push to put them on the field, but so few people have the perspective and the patience to say, look, this is a long-term play. This isn't about, you know, trying to strike, you know, to strike gold right now. This is about developing the future. And unfortunately, what happens is that general manager who drafted that number one quarterback is in that number one position because they stunk the year before. Yeah. And so if they stunk the year before, then the owner slash fan base is already upset with them. And so you draft that high quarterback and think, I don't want to draft this guy and sit him another year, because that's pretty much guaranteed, only to have myself get fired and some new GM come in and take this quarterback and ride him out for 12 years. So they put him in the game.
Yeah.
That's what happens. It's not about the development. It's not what's best for the quarterback. It is what is potentially best for that general manager who drafted him and saving his job. There is example after example. And I will go to my grave saying that the best thing for the longevity of an NFL quarterback's career is to sit and watch, because I will tell you firsthand that I didn't know what I didn't know. And the experience you simply get is invaluable just by watching.
And you also think that, look, Patrick Mahomes sat for a year, but if Patrick Mahomes is in New York, he's not lighting the world on fire right now. There is something True. To be said for
yep,
playing
being the right
for,
place at the right time.
Andy Reid is one of the best minds in NFL history when you talk about offense, and the man is an innovator. And you look at Tyreek Hill, you look at Kareem Hunt, you look at Kelsey, you look at one of the elite offensive lines. You put Patrick Mahomes in New York, even sat a year, and he's not throwing for 33 touchdowns. He's not winning an MVP. So, yeah, not only are you getting thrown sometimes to the wolves the first year, but a lot of times you're getting thrown with bad coaching and bad teams. There's a that you mentioned, the reason why you stink a lot of times is you're on a crappy team
yep.
that doesn't have it, and you get thrown in as a first-year guy, as you said, that doesn't know what you don't know. And by the way, there's no one there to pick you up. So really a lot of it is circumstance. You can't convince me that if Tom Brady is a sixth-round pick and he's in Cleveland that we're talking about Tom Brady right now. He's probably out of the league in 3 years.
The best thing in my mind is to be the 17th pick of the draft. Be the 19th pick of the draft.
Where was
Mahomes?
And
13?
Sit.
Yeah.
And sit for a year. It is a recipe for success.
Yeah, and that's what he sat behind Alex Smith, who was very good.
Yep.
And by the way, for all the numbers, and look, I'm not trying to say that the Kansas City offense is the same,
right.
but if you go back and look at what Alex Smith did with Andy Reid in this same collection of talent, the numbers aren't that much different. Alex Smith in Kansas City were pretty damn
very
good
successful.
Last year.
Yes.
And so, you know, granted, Andy Reid was smart enough to realize, hey, there's a ceiling here with Alex Smith. There's not one with Patrick Mahomes. And that was a big move to get rid of a Pro Bowl quarterback to go on a second round guy or to go with a second year guy. But Andy Reid had faith in it. But let's not act like Patrick Mahomes came in and took the worst offense in the world and turned it into something that was really good. Patrick Mahomes took an elite offense and made it that much better.
Well, and Joey, you mentioned Cleveland. This year, they tried to do the right thing. They bring in Tyrod Taylor. They were going to have Baker Mayfield sit behind him. And that all collapsed in 3 weeks. But Tyrod Taylor was playing really bad football. So if you're in that situation and you draft a guy number one overall and you've got the pressure of needing to win and the guy you picked to do the wait-a-year strategy sucks, what do you do then?
Look for a new job. Yeah.
That's the
Andrew
damned.
Jackson
if,
is.
That's there the damned go. If you do, damned if you
exactly.
don't.
Exactly. I mean, that is the nature of the NFL. I mean, there are so many things that go into these decisions, and they are not always based in the best interests of the player.
In honesty, and I'm not going to ask you for specifics, but I just think the coaching in the NFL is vastly overrated.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a belief that because you're coaching in the NFL that you're the best.
Nope.
And I think that couldn't be further from the truth. How many people that you worked with did you feel were actually, I don't know, let's say elite coaches?
Okay. Jason Garrett, Mike Mularkey, Nick Saban. All three I had in Miami. I don't think Mike Mularkey is an elite head coach. I think he's an elite offensive coordinator.
Norv Turner-esque.
He's a brilliant offensive, just so creative, and so he makes the game simple. In Detroit, I'm trying to think. Elite. I think there were some very good coaches. I think Greg Olson was a very good coach. I think that Steve Mariucci was a good head coach for the right team. It was not our team. I think Rod Marinelli is an elite defensive coordinator, not an elite head coach. Sean Payton, when I was in New Orleans, where did I go? Atlanta.
The good ones stick out, right?
Absolutely. And what happens so often in the NFL is guys will play for their job and they will coach for their job. And if you look at the coaching rosters from year to year, it's why they talk about coaching family trees. Because Andy Reid and Dennis Green and John Gruden and Steve Mariucci, all these groups come off of the Bill Walsh coaching tree. And those Bill Walsh coaching tree creates offensive line coaches and receiver coaches that go from one spot to the next and are there to get their pension. Let's be honest. These guys are not that much better. And oftentimes they are not better than the coaches in college football. Now, college football and NFL coaches, I generally believe, are better than high school coaches. I think that's a fair assessment. But the difference, but just because you are the best player in the NFL does not mean that you are coached by the best coach. I will hands down say that 90% of my quarterback coaching in the NFL, save for Jason Garrett and maybe Bill Musgrave when I was in Atlanta, it was not better than what I got from Jeff Tedford at Oregon.
Would any of the coaches you had when you were playing for the Ducks have had success in the NFL, in your opinion?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bilotti would have. I think Tedford's circumstance was unfortunate with his health. I think Chris Peterson, he was our wide receiver coach at Oregon. Yeah. Who else? Running backs. Gary Campbell was a college guy. I think Tom Osborne would have done fairly well in the NFL. He would have been a great special teams coach. I mean, you can go through, a litany of guys that came through the Oregon program and would have done very well in the NFL.
I just remember bouncing around and seeing a lot of guys that I just scratched my head at and was kind of like, why? What are you here for? And then you saw others like Mike Tomlin was our DB coach in Tampa. And I'll tell you what, when you met Mike Tomlin, you knew that guy was going places. Mike Tomlin wasn't going to be a DB coach for very long. There was you can tell. But then there's a lot of other guys that you just look around and you'd be like, my God, like how are you collecting a check?
Our tight end coach in Detroit had never played the game of football. He was 5'7", 158 pounds. Everything he knew about football, he had learned from reading a playbook. And he was coaching Steven Alexander. And he was coaching Marcus Pollard. And he was coaching guys that were Pro Bowl tight ends. And he couldn't teach him anything.
Yeah.
It is a good old boys network. That looks out for their own. And when you get a head coaching job, you want to be surrounded by people that you know will support you, because that is what it is about. It is about keeping your job.
Joey Harrington joining us here on Primetime. Like he does every single Friday. Back to Mahomes quickly. The second prong that I wanted to ask about was the air raid offense and the quarterbacks in the air raid and how they translate to the NFL. We talked about this actually, was it a couple days ago?
Yeah.
And we went through a list of guys, and generally the air raid guys struggle in the NFL. Mahomes played at Texas Tech, air raid system, to a T, and he is having wild success, granted having sat a year learning under Alex Smith and in a good offense with good skill players. Why is he the one standing out, and is it possible that air raid quarterbacks moving forward might have more success, or is it a kind of a case of a one guy got lucky or with a good situation?
I think that the NFL game has evolved from, the air raid guys of the you know, the Cliff Kingsbury's, and I'm trying to think of Houston.
David Klingler, Andre Ware.
Yes, Andre Ware, absolutely. The NFL game has evolved because so often you got those guys who just chucked it around all the time, and now you're going to put them in the pocket, you know, in front of an I-backs and ask them to do play action and pick up a side adjust, you know, off the fourth guy on the weak side. You know, that's not what they've done. There has been enough evolution in the NFL game to, I think, make more of these guys comfortable, because there really isn't that much difference between what Marcus Mariota did at Oregon and Patrick Mahomes did at Texas Tech. I mean, there's wrinkles, but it's all based on spreading the field. It's all based on creating mismatches and numbers matchups, and the NFL has adopted some of that style of play. Now, simply the fact that these athletes are off the scale good makes some of that impossible to do at the NFL level. But I think you combine that with the fact that he did sit for a year, because let's not forget that Andy Reid comes from the Bill Walsh and coaching tree. He is a West Coast guy who has done a good job of evolving, and credit to him for bringing in concepts that may have been foreign to him. And I think it speaks to why he's been able to sustain for so long and have so much success over a long period of time, is because he was willing to adopt those things that may have been foreign. But at his core, he is still a West Coast guy. And I think that having that year to sit and watch, combined with the fact that he's probably really, 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 really talented, that doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's we all want to look for like the sub 6 foot quarterback, right? Like if Russell Wilson has success, or Drew Brees, right?
Drew Brees barely hits 6 foot on he keeps that hair going up there, like, and he kind of wisps it up to make him look 6'1".
And so we all want to believe that, well, if Drew Brees can do it, then the next guy that's 5'11 can do it. If Drew Brees can find passing lanes, that's the most underrated thing, by the way, in football history, that guy is able to find passing windows.
Well, it looks like he stands on his tiptoes and looks over the offensive line.
It's honestly one of the hardest things. It's also why they play so much in the gun. It gives you a better perspective. Yep. You can see over, but he finds windows. He finds lanes to throw. So when the next guy comes in that's 5'11", they're like, well, Drew Brees can do it. Why can't I? Well, it's like saying that, you know, like, go find me the best guitarist in the world. Carlos Santana can play the guitar. Why can't I? Well, because it's really hard to do. And so, you know, Patrick Mahomes has success coming out of the air raid. Well, then we should start drafting air raid guys. No, you shouldn't.
You're saying Gardner Minshew's not the next Patrick Mahomes?
No, he's not. It's hilarious that we find whatever exception, whatever outlier exists in the NFL, right? A left tackle with short arms, or a DB with tight hips. Or a receiver that's a bad route runner. Randy Moss is a bad route runner. He wasn't great, but it didn't matter because he was
6'5" and could grab the ball and run right by you.
Yes. And so they go into this rash of, well, he's a tall, lazy guy that's not a great route runner. Randy Moss is good at it. Let's draft the next guy. Stop with trying to find the exception. There's a reason why there's a mold that exists in the NFL. And yes, there's outliers to that, but there's a reason why most of the ones that have success fit in a certain kind of mold, because more often than not, that is the general skill set that you need to succeed. And it's not just a quarterback. It's at every position in the NFL, right? You can't make a left tackle out of a guy that's 6'2 with short arms. You can't do it. You have to have a certain makeup in order to have a realistic chance to succeed. One guy defies that. That's the thing that always makes me laugh about the NFL.
And before we let you go, Joey, we played this yesterday on the show. Mike Leach is a gem for audio. He's absolutely hilarious. And
was it the fat little girlfriend's quote? Is that what he played?
No, it was the which coach would win in a fight in the Pac-12.
Yeah, the Pac-12 coach fight.
God. Are you asking me which coach would win in a fight?
And I did lay out to hope that you would answer, yeah.
And more importantly, who wins, but who's last? That's what I'm more intrigued by. Right. Who's finishing last
like
in
Chip
the coach
Kelly's
fight?
Last, right?
Chris Peterson.
No, Pete is scrappy.
Really?
Pete is scrappy. You don't mess with Pete. Pete's got an anger to him. Oh, yeah. You don't cross that guy. Yeah. I'm trying to think.
Maybe Mike Leach is last.
I don't know.
I feel like Leach would fight
Mike's
dirty.
Mike's kind of conniving, yeah.
I feel like Leach would pull a knife. Yeah, and like when no one was looking,
he would swashbuckle you or something. You know, he'd shank you. Yeah, I don't know. Is Chip Kelly last?
Like, Chip doesn't look very athletic. Let's be honest.
Tom and her, I wouldn't put it past Herm.
No, Herm's scary. I feel like Herm's old school.
Yeah.
Like, Herm would come out like Sharks and Jets, like West Side Story. It'd be like a denim vest that he would break out.
I was thinking more of like a 1930s boxer. Like, he'd just come out like, yeah, like stand you. In front of you, like, what do you got? Punch me in the face. Yeah. Okay, that's what you got? Now I'm going to punch you in the face.
Yeah, Herm's sneaky. It may be Chip. And it may be Chip finishing last.
Kyle Whittingham looks jacked. Right? Would he? I feel like he would do well.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I might not put my money past Mario.
Yeah,
it's Mario might. He's got some Saban in him.
Whittingham was around when I was at BYU because he's a BYU guy. The Whittingham works out with his players like they run like the hill. Like there's a hill there with the big U on it.
Yeah.
He beats the vast majority of his players. Like Whittingham. Whittingham and Cristobal still look like they could whoop some ass. Like that's the one too. Although I'm intrigued now with this Chris Peterson thing.
I'm going to put my money on Pete in the semifinals. I think Pete makes the final four. I've seen that guy lose it on people on the field. Yeah, Pete's my guy.
All right. Chris Peterson, the winner of the Pac-12 coach fight.
I didn't say he was winning. I said he made the
semifinals. Final four of the Pac-12 coach
fight. Yes, exactly.
All right, thank you so much for coming in, Joey. Appreciate it. And not sure what we're doing next week with Thanksgiving, but we'll chat with you soon.
I'll be around. You know where to find me.